Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The state's public universities and schools are asking the South Dakota Board of Regents for around $90 million to complete projects they say are high priority. The South Dakota School of Mines and Technology is seeking to build a new mineral industries building that would become the hub of regional industrial, academic, and governmental collaboration related to those industries. President Jim Rankin and Provost Lance Roberts are joining us today from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio inside SDPB's Rapid City studio to talk about the proposal. President Jim Rankin, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Lance Roberts, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start so folks know what we're talking about. What are we talking about when we say mineral industries? Who would like to begin with that overview?
This is Lance. So when we talk about the mineral industries, it's really three different academic departments. So mining engineering, metallurgical engineering, and geology / geological engineering. So those three departments are currently housed in our mineral industries building.
All right. Give us an idea of what the need is. Let's describe the space where those departments are currently at, because I saw some pictures online.
So the existing building was built in 1962. So it's showing its age. Right now, the three departments are basically separated by floor, and we've really lost a lot of the function of the building. We call it the labs are more or less functionally obsolete. It's with advances in technology and equipment. We've really run out of capacity to put new equipment into the building with regards to electrical, air, water, things like that. So the new building would really commingle those departments. We work together naturally already, and so let's have collaborative spaces, collaborative research spaces, collaborative learning spaces, new and improved classrooms, new technology, and of course the ability to implement new equipment and other things within the building. So that's sort of our vision.
Expand a little bit on that sense of being functionally obsolete. With what kind of equipment does it not fit? Does it not, operate there? Sure. You're out of space. Give us an idea of what you mean there.
Sort of all of the above. I mean, we have new equipment that we've purchased. We have to find space for it, so we're limited on space. Once we do find space, we can put it into a lab, but that lab space generally doesn't have the power that we need, or water, for example, and so we have to make renovations to get those utilities to that piece of equipment. And then I have had a lab there previously where I couldn't run two pieces of equipment at the same time just because of the limitations of the power. So we've got those sorts of things happening really all throughout the building.
All right. So a lot of us, that might be, a printer and another device. What does it mean for those departments, though, if you can't run the equipment?
Right. So on the, undergraduate teaching side, it's, really limitations with the labs that we have with our courses. We pride ourselves being very hands-on. And so having those labs with the courses is a very critical component. And not being able to run that equipment or run one piece of equipment at one time is very, very limiting. Of course, on the research side, it's just as critical. I mean, if you have research contracts, whether that be public or private, there's an expectation for you to be able to use your equipment to complete that research. And so you have those sorts of limitations as well.
And President Rankin, talk a little bit about how much this institution has changed since 1962, when this building was first imagined and constructed. A lot has happened in the world of science since then.
Well, and the technology has changed from 1962. The number of computers we have, there's scanning electron microscopes in the building. They all need power. I think if you would walk by this building right now, you'd find it's one of the few buildings we have on campus that has window air conditioners sticking out of almost every window because we don't have central HVAC in there. And that expensive equipment needs to be cooled as well as having good conditioned power. So it just, the technology has changed. And would you have a group of students in one class? Can't just say, well, one of you gets to go now and the rest of you wait in turn. So we've got to be able to run multiple pieces of equipment at one time. To be able to do that education. And we need to look at research as well. So we wouldn't have a research mission as well as we have that academic mission.
Well, we'll talk about how this sort of thing, you know, gets funded in just a moment. But first, I want to talk about reimagining and sort of when you make a plan, then you're looking for, you know, quite a few years in the future as well. It's hard to predict what those needs might be. Where do you begin with what kind of building you need at a facility like the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology?
Well, I think we need to look at what we can do to make things a little more flexible. If you look at the existing building, you know, it's a little hard to renovate because we have asbestos everywhere. The hallways are narrow, the ceilings are low. And so as we go forward, we need to look at how we can be more flexible in space so that we can actually change as the technology moves forward and the mission changes.
Do you have a plan for what this new building should look like? Tell us about it.
We have an artist rendition of what it should look like, but I'm actually going to let Dr. Roberts, he's been more involved with the design, talk a little bit about what we're expecting to see.
Sure. So we have engaged an architect, and they have completed a programmatic study, and basically what that is the three departments all got together, explained their needs, what they see as the vision in the future, and then working with the architect really came up with, okay, what sorts of labs do we need? What sorts of teaching spaces do we need? What sorts of student collaborative spaces do we need? And to Dr. Rankin's point, many of these spaces are very, very flexible, and so they can actually be a classroom 1 hour, and then the next hour be a student collaborative area, the third hour potentially a research area, not necessarily with equipment, but just a space for other researchers to meet and collaborate. And so there is a lot of flexibility with the building. Of course, you're right. We, you know, projecting out what our power needs in the future. I mean, obviously we want to make sure that we have that capacity to grow and with new equipment and new, and even maybe new programs in the future. So it's been a really good process. We've all really collaborated together in the building, and that's what makes it, I think, fairly exciting.
And how do you plan for sort of increasing that collaboration when you're moving from a building where things are separated by floor? Is it just catching up with what's already being done, or do you somehow create something that can create more collaboration within the school? And then let's talk about collaboration, you know, without, you know, with other organizations and agencies.
Yeah, I think it's just being forward-looking and seeing, okay, what are our limitations today? And, of course, we want to try to address those, but then also what might we need to collaborate with in the future? And so we do have some visions of a bigger research mission within that building, really being focused on technology within the mineral industries. And so thinking through what those needs might be, there will be a lot of industry engagement as well. So how do we incorporate all of that into the new building? But yeah, just trying to be a little bit more forward thinking in what we put into the building.
Yeah.
And if that's all right, I'll let me jump in. I think also the mission changes a little bit. While we still have to have that mineral industries focus or that mining technology focus, today's world in mining is becoming more and more autonomous. It's becoming virtual reality. It's becoming running machines by distance. And so you're seeing what I would call multidisciplinary projects. So it's not just training in one discipline anymore. We have to make sure we've got that capability to do that multidisciplinary team.
And you talk about it being a hub, a regional hub. Tell me more about that. Is that how it sort of functions now, or is that those based on plans in the future?
Yeah, really based on plans in the future. So we have a lot of really significant industrial partners that are looking towards us to really start conducting research within the technology space. And again, if you look at mining, most people don't realize just how technologically advanced it is. I mean, we're running equipment 3,000 feet underground remotely. It's robotics, it's autonomous, drones, things like that. And so we have some industry partners that are saying, look, we know that mining is going to become more challenging in the future. We're going deeper. We're going into places that are warmer, hotter, so we need to advance that technology. And so it's really bringing those three departments together, but also departments like mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, materials, all those departments together to really address those industry needs and really grow this to be regional, bringing in some of the local mines around the Rapid City area to really advance that technology, potentially bringing SURF into the mix where we can actually do some things underground within SURF as well. So
SURF, explain SURF, please.
Sanford Underground Research
sure.
Facility.
All right, thank you. So you have a vision, and what is the process to sort of make something like this become reality?
Well, let me jump in there. We're taking a look at what that impact is, and you know, we've had a long history with mining. It's even in the South Dakota Constitution that one institution has to teach mining and metallurgy, and that's the School of Mines. So we come at this with a long history of where we're going with that. And I know I was surprised, and I think many South Dakotans would be surprised, but if you take a look at the economic impact of mining in the state, it's about $522 million went into the economy a year ago. And if you take a look at indirect impacts, you're probably looking at $2.5 billion that came out of the various mining technologies and mining areas. So it's got quite an impact in the state of South Dakota. And you know, we've got a saying as we're looking forward that if you don't grow it, you've got to mine it. And that's, you know, the things that we use in our everyday world are related to mining. So this is important to the state. It's important to the nation. And so we're out talking to our industry partners, and then we're looking for the state to help us reach that funding level for a new building. And we have some partners that the question is, if the state doesn't want to invest, why would we? And we think this has got to be really a private-public partnership for us to move this building forward.
So how are some of those conversations going with, you know, what are you asking from the state, and how do you ask it? What's the process?
We start out with the Board of Regents. We put a budget request in when we met in June, an informal one, and we'll continue to work with the board as we go forward. The board will then put forward a budget request to the state, to the governor's office, and we're continuing to work with our legislators and the governor's office so that they understand the need for this building and what that impact is for South Dakota.
When do you start finding out what some of those responses are and putting together, you know, give us an idea, when do you break ground on something like this if you're successful?
Well, that's a good question. We'd always like it sooner than later, but it takes a process. So we've got to go through and get approval from the legislature. So it's not a short term. I mean, we're looking out into next year at the very, very earliest.
Give us an idea. You mentioned the impact of mining technology in the state's economy at $522 million. Is that something that you are tying into projections that could be a lot more? What is that like from a nationwide perspective? What's the potential here?
Yeah, so really, you know, tied to this technology hub, one of our visions is that this would grow as new technologies are developed through the research, that this would spin off new companies that would want to relocate, you know, to South Dakota to, you know, manufacture that technology, test that technology. So we're really looking at trying to address really a nationwide problem, which is we rely so heavily on some very critical minerals that are being imported from overseas, and as a nation, we really need to try to develop our own sources, and those sources are here, but we just need the increase in technology. We need to be willing to go out and mine deeper, and so that's what we're trying to address.
Are there federal opportunities for funding, federal grants?
Well, you know, I think one of the areas that is important, and we're talking about even more now, but back in December of 2017, President Trump issued Executive Order 13817. Because of the 35 minerals that are critical to our economy, we import 31 of them. And that executive order was taking a look at how do we look for those 31 minerals inside the United States so we don't have to rely on imports from other countries. The Department of Interior just released a report within the last month, and they talked about six areas to help with that federal strategy. One of them was in mining research. One was to help educate on what the importance were of mineral resources. And the other one that really hits us is to grow the mining or mineral industry's workforce. So we see that there's really a close tie-in with the federal government if we're going to help to stabilize that part of the economy for these critical minerals.
Talk a little bit about this, the basic recruitment of students. As you know, parents look around and visit colleges, you know, you're going to tour those buildings and you're going to take a look at those facilities. What does a 1962 building sort of do to that campus tour?
It does make it very challenging. I mean, we try to show them the best spaces within the building, obviously, but you're right. I mean, these students are visiting a lot of our competitors, and many of those universities do have new or newer buildings, and so it is a bit of a challenge. We do tell them that there is a plan to replace the building, and so we at least try to get that on their radar screen. But you're absolutely correct. It is very, very challenging when they're visiting other places that do have newer facilities.
Are you seeing strong alumni support in the donation category? Alumni seem like folks who could get behind the project too.
Yeah, we are. I would say between alums and the companies that they work for, definitely.
All right. Any final thoughts here on this Mineral Industries building and what's happening at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology before we let you go?
Well, I think it's important. South Dakota has a chance to be the leader in what we're going to do in critical resources and minerals. And there are only 5 universities in the nation that have these 3 programs that we have. So this is really an opportunity for us to move forward and take that leadership position. And that's where the School of Mines would like to be. And we're hoping that's where the state of South Dakota would like to be as well.
President Jim Rankin and Provost Lance Roberts. Dr. Rankin, Dr. Roberts, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.